Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Hackers and HackZen podcast. You're about to join Erica, Jax, and John for an inclusive cybersecurity conversation designed to educate and break the stereotypes of cybersecurity professionals while providing life hacks on how to handle burnout, networking, and goal setting. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome back, Hackers and HackZen fam. Today we have the pleasure of hosting our special guest, John Ownby. John is the curriculum development specialist for cyber.org. John, thank you so much for joining us today. It is a total pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm terrific. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you.
Well, John, before we get started today, would you mind giving our listeners just a quick introduction on yourself? Anything that you think may be relevant to today's conversation?
I'm a former teacher. I taught elementary and middle school, primarily elementary. I've taught everything from second to seventh. Most of my career was spent teaching third grade, so that's kind of where my heart is in the elementary space. And I bring a lot of interesting perspective. I was not a great student, and when it came to teaching in my classroom and working with my students, that affected how I related to them and how I approach curriculum development in my career today.
John, you have such a fascinating background. It's very, very diverse. You received your undergraduate degree in human development and family studies, and then continued to complete your graduate degree in Christian studies. So I'm very curious. I mean, that's a very diverse background. How did you get from going into human development, family studies, even into Christian studies, and now you're working in the cyberspace? What does that journey look like for you?
That is an interesting journey is a good way to put it. I've always wanted to be a teacher, even as a kid. I come from a long line of teachers on both sides of my family. And so it was one of those things that it was just a natural passion of mine to work in education and to be that classroom teacher. Moving through high school and into college, I let my laziness and procrastination and lack of motivation kind of get the best of me in college. And when it came to pursuing a teaching degree, I just thought that's an awful lot of work. I don't want to do that because I didn't want to go that route. And so I got a fairly generic degree. But as I was getting ready to graduate college, I was talked into enrolling in seminary, which I did, and earned a master's degree. And that's also where I met my wife. We were both going to school in Memphis, and she talked me into, after graduation, moving down to North Louisiana and enrolling in the teacher certification program at Louisiana Tech. And I thought, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. At this point, I was thinking that a teaching career was kind of out of that ship had sailed, but maybe I could, do something here. I earned my certification while I was in the classroom teaching. They allowed you to work on your certification while you were in the classroom teaching. So I would teach all day, then go to class at night. And that for me was very formative because I was seeing at the same time I was, learning theory and the idealistic methodologies and practices and, kind of the fundamentals in the collegiate program, I was also applying them immediately into my classroom with my students and seeing the practical applications of that. But there was something interesting else that was going on at the same time. I quickly figured out that many of my students coming into my classroom were from a very diverse background, and many of them from very difficult home lives that did not value learning or motivated the kids to pursue their personal interest or potential. And, you know, that's one of those things that's easy to give lip service to. And it's one of the things that's easy to quote, no, but it's quite a different thing to experience in the classroom. And this brought me to a quick change in my teaching style and my teaching philosophy. And about halfway through my first year, I made a change in how I presented information and how I related to my students. And that affected the rest of my career. And so I had decided that I may not be able to change the environment that the kids are living in, but I can make a positive influence on my students and make a classroom a happy place where learning was interesting. And I made that intentional effort to be their biggest ally when it came to education. And that affected not just their academic career, but socially and emotionally as well. They knew they had an advocate in me. They knew they had an ally, someone they could turn to when they're struggling, and they could feel comfortable talking with me if they were coming across struggles, whether that was, you know, with their friends, whether that was something that they were having issues with, you know, that we were discussing in class, or even just opening up about, you know, they had a rough night at home, you know, the night before, and they needed some space. They needed a safe place where they could just kind of decompress. And after a while, you get to know those students and you could pick up on visual cues that allow that you knew when they walked in to your classroom, they had a rough time. I need to be very careful about how I approach my day and allow them the space to kind of decompress before engaging them. And so about 5 years into my teaching career, I moved to a charter school that was in the same town. And that particular move was both life-changing and career-changing. And there's a whole lot in that story that we don't really have time to go into, and I don't really want to go into it, you know, here. There's so much there, but it was kind of like coming out of a cave and into a garden. And in that respect, it was there that my personal growth really began to take off. And I found myself in an environment for me in which I had allies and a group of teachers and friends that supported and encouraged one another and allowed me to really blossom as a teacher. And that then affected my students. It was in that time that I was chosen to be a pilot teacher for a brand new curriculum that had just come out from a group. And at the time, it was known as NICERC, N-I-C-E-R-C, the National Integrated Cyber Education Research Center, which is today known as cyber.org. And they had piloted this new, or they had written this new curriculum. They needed some pilot teachers to test it out. And I was chosen as one of those teachers. And I had a full plate already and was told I needed by my principal. She was like, you need to implement this in your classroom in addition to what you're already doing. And I was adamant against it. I was like, no, no, I don't need anything else. No. And she's like, no, you really have to. This is what something you have to do. So to prove her wrong, what I decided to do was show all the ways in which it shouldn't be used or why it was not adequate. And in doing so, I realized a couple of things. One, the curriculum that was being written, that was being developed, was really, really good and very flexible. And it was written to me as a teacher, but also to the students. And it allowed the students to take more control of their learning. And I got to sit back and be a facilitator of the learning and kind of take that journey along with them. At the same time, I was realizing that as a teacher, I needed to be less of a sage on the stage per se, and more involved with my students. And this allowed me to do that. And it completely revolutionized my classroom. And I began to have that mentality of, this is what education should be like. This is more in depth, more involved. I thought I was doing a great job, but this is so much better. And it was a lot less work on my end as a teacher. And I got to spend more time in that learning process with my students.
And that wonderful journey, John. To kind of backtrack a little bit, I'd love to just dive into what is a curriculum development specialist responsible for? So let's peel that onion a little bit, just for our listeners here that may not be familiar with that kind of title. I mean, I know you have this educator background. Your passion for education is incredible. I mean, I'm feeling it through the camera, through the microphone.
Yeah.
So really want to kind of see why education and what does a curriculum development specialist do?
So that's a good question. And that's a question I get asked a lot by my family. They're like, what do you do? So much of what I do involves a lot of research and collaboration with team members. There's so much that goes into writing a quality lesson or a series of lessons, more than just typing words on a screen. One of the first places we begin is with national academic standards, where we analyze what concepts are intended to be taught and the parameters of those concepts based on a particular grade level or a group of grade levels. Sometimes the ideas come to us just by our things that are happening in the news, current events, or we come across something just in our day-to-day lives that we're like, you know what? That needs to be addressed. And so we brainstorm ideas around that concept and begin looking at how this idea or this topic might fit within national standards. And we research as a team and learn as much as we can about a topic and so that we can back up our claims or our information or data with facts and with hard knowledge. There are so many elements that also go into designing a high quality curriculum beyond just the academic standards, things like age appropriate language and syntax, the cognitive development of the intended audience, implementation strategies, differentiation and misconceptions that need to be addressed, scaffolding of lessons from one beginning point onward. How easy it is to implement for the teacher, materials, cost efficiency, flexibility, how interactive the students are going to be. Personal applicability is another big one, is making it relevant to the students. And also national trends, there's so much more that goes into that. We work, I'm just one of many curriculum development specialist at cyber.org. And we work together in teams and share ideas. But one of the most critical aspects of my job has nothing to do with writing and research. It's the collaboration. It's listening to my team members and sharing ideas, listening to their ideas and getting feedback and allowing myself to be influenced by those opinions and those perspectives and that information that they're giving me. You know, I would write a lesson. I would think it's great. And I would think, oh man, I've just knocked this one out of the park. It's great. This is just going to sail through. And I send it to my team members and they're like, you know, this is good, but you missed an idea here, or you need to expound on this topic here, or there's some edits over here that need to be made, or you know, you went a little too far in this area. You need to dial it back a little bit more. And those kind of things. And as a team, we can develop some really, you know, terrific stuff that's, you know, highly engaging, but also addressing critical topics. And, you know, cybersecurity being one of those key issues.
Yeah, and that really segues into my next question, John, because just given the vast experience you've had, did you ever imagine that you would be doing anything related to cybersecurity?
Oh man, no way. No, I really figured that I would be in the classroom for my entire career. And it was not until I came across the cyber.org curriculum and I taught it for a couple of years. I called the guy who's now my boss, and we were talking. And I said, hey, if you guys are, you know, interested in, you know, a teacher, you know, in hiring somebody, I know a guy. And And so we had several conversations, and I had partnered with them and contracted with them on a couple of different events. And they were like, yeah, that'd be, you know, we would like to hire you full time. And in that, I initially thought, I'm just going to be bringing a teacher's perspective to the table, mm-hmm. and being able to, you know, look at the concepts or the content that they were writing and offer my point of view from my experience.
Yeah.
And that quickly shifted. Yes. That is what I was doing. And yes, I was writing content and, you know, bringing my own flair, I guess you could say, to the writing process and the creative process there. But there were trends and there were ideas that I, because of who I am, where I was, how I'd grown up, my experiences, that, and not being in the midst of, not having that cyber background, that I became aware of really quickly. And some of those, you know, some of those topics were, you know, gender inequality in cyber fields and the misrepresentation of, you know, different individuals and people groups within cyber careers. Aside from the fact that there are, you know, we're looking at over 500,000 jobs today that are waiting to be filled. And then, you know, in the next year, is projected to hit 1.8 million cyber-related careers waiting to be filled. We just don't have the workforce to fill it. And then I hear stories, and I meet people who express their interest in, you know, cybersecurity or coding or programming, robotics, information technology, computer science, but are being told that they can't or they shouldn't, or are being ignored because of who they are. And part of me, you know, stops and thinks, is just kind of dumbfounded by the idea that it's 2021 and we're still wrapped around those ideas, or that mindset. But another part of me is very encouraged when I, you know, come to a space and I see a room full of women and full of girls, or full of, you know, these diverse fields who are chomping at the bit saying, this is what we want to do. And we want to make a career, a life out of, you know, information technology, computer science, cybersecurity. Mm.
I love it. I love your passion, John. This is definitely your calling. You found it. I love your passion. You can tell that you love what you do and you're a really good teacher. I wish I had had you when I was growing up.
Ditto.
Yeah, it definitely, when you have a teacher, it truly enjoys what they're doing. And you said it at the start of this podcast about your desire to, and I'm paraphrasing, but your desire to impact them and have a lasting impression on their lives. And that says a lot. And you said a few things just a second ago I want to highlight. You were talking about, I think you said 1.8 million careers waiting to be filled in the cyberspace. Mm-hmm. And we've got robotics and information tech and some things that you've also been opened up to with the gender equality, which is a real thing. And it's still a challenge in the sector. And I know some of our listeners that are hearing you right now are like, yes, yes, yes. So I'm curious, though, knowing what you know now, and you've gone through so much and you've seen so much and you're still seeing it on a daily basis, and you're with these students day in and day out, is there any advice that you can give to them that maybe you wish you had had before you had started on this journey that may help them in their journey down this path? If it's cyber, if it's robotics, whatever that is, any space, what would that advice be?
Follow your passion. If you're interested in it, follow it. And there's going to be bumps and hiccups along the way. That's just part of life, but not to get discouraged. Feel free to explore and continue to dive in. I'll share a story real quick. And this is recent. This is as of last week. I met a person who was very reclusive, very, very self-conscious. And this person was also visually impaired and did not receive a whole lot of support from home, or and was also told, you know, this is not something you should do because of your visual impairment. However, we put this person in front of a computer, and we taught them Linux and some HTML, and taught them how to create their own website. And that was just a starting point. And what I saw within hours was this shell just fall apart and this beautiful flower just emerge. He was just diving in and just became engulfed, I guess is the right word, this idea of putting their thoughts, their interest onto a website. And this person did not want to tell so much about themselves personally, but they had an interest, a particular interest. And they began to create this really incredible informational website on this particular interest of theirs, to the point that I came over to them and said, "You're going to be teaching this class one day. You're going to be doing this." That afternoon, they had students lined up at their table saying, "Hey, I've got a question. Can you help me?" And this person was able to help them. And I'm like, don't let anybody tell you you can't. If you think you can, do it. And if there's a problem, solve it. Be creative. Feel free to express yourself and be creative within your passion. For me personally, teaching is a passion of mine, and I had a love for my students, but I had to get creative. I was not a great student. I struggled with reading, and I struggled with that kind of structure of sit still and be in place, sit still and listen. I couldn't do that. And I didn't want my students to feel like that either. So I would get creative within my space. People would tell me my classroom was like a cartoon. But I tried to create an environment where students felt free to be themselves. They could ask questions. They didn't have to worry about what other people thought. If they had a question or an answer to a question that I asked and they weren't sure about it, that's fine. I never told them, "No, you can't do that," or "No, that's wrong." It was, "Okay, that's a good point of view," or "That's a good thought. Does anyone else have a thought on that?" And it was not dismissive and it was not judgmental. It was, you shared a thought. We're going to listen to other thoughts as well and see which of these thoughts is the more accurate based on the information. And so it breaks my heart when I hear people say, "I've been told I can't do this because I'm a girl, because I'm African-American, because I have this impairment." I have a daughter that loves programming and coding and being creative. And it would break my heart if she found a passion, she found something she wanted to do, but then somebody told her she can't because she's a woman. At the same time, I have a son with a limb difference. He's missing part of his left hand. It just didn't develop in utero. And he's a terrific problem solver. But I don't want him to feel like he can't do something because he has a physical impairment. And that leads me to one last story of a student who was a big inspiration early on in my career. She had a limb difference. She only had a thumb and a pinky on her left hand. Well, the school had purchased a special keyboard for her to use in the computer lab. And they brought it in. They said, "This is for you." And she goes, "I don't want it. You can take it away." And she threw it away. She goes, "I'm going to use this keyboard just like everyone else." And she did. And she was great. And, it was very empowering, for her to kind of take that step and say, You're not going to treat me different because you think I'm different. I'm going to show you I can do the same things that everyone else can do.
Amen. Oh, I love that. And I think that as part of that, you know, your role has been more than just an educator. It's been many times, you know, a shoulder to lean on. It's been, and I think that's one of the most beautiful things about people in education, teachers, a father, a friend. I mean, you're filling so many roles, right? Like you are their coach. Sometimes you are the only person that they have to lean on and to talk to about what's happening in their home life. And you know what? Whether you realized it that day or not, a lot of times there were days where your classroom was the safest place that they were going to be. So I definitely, hats off to you, John. I know that you have made a huge impact on a lot of your students. And if your students are here listening, they know what kind of teacher you are and the impact that you've had in their professional lives. And often, you know, just getting them comfortable with being uncomfortable and opening them up to opportunities that they may never have thought were possible for them. So John, I know we're reaching here time. It has been so amazing having you today. I know our listeners are going to want to know where to contact you. So of course I have to ask, if anyone is looking to get a hold of you, John, how can they reach you?
So they can find me on LinkedIn at John-Ownby. And, or if they would like to know more about who we are at cyber.org, they can go there. And makes it easy because our name is our address.
Awesome. But,
yeah, you'll find a lot of allies in that space.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. This has been great.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Hackers and HackZen podcast with Erica, Jax, and John. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.